Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Larry Mueller. Really happy to have you listening in today as we have a chance to visit with Barb Larson. Barb is the horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County. She's been with us many times. It's great to have her back. And again, thank you for listening in. And if you have some questions for her, we can cover a pretty broad range of things here today, I think. We can talk about vegetables, we can talk about flowers, and a whole lot more. So call in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post a photo, perhaps, or a question on the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We already have one photo up there that we'll try and talk about a bit. But certainly go ahead and do that as well. We'd love to hear from you. Barb, welcome back.
Thanks. I'm real happy to be here, especially in kind of peak garden season. That's great.
It's really great. And it's peak, all right. And there are some things that are peaking in the garden that we don't want. And I've had some calls on Colorado potato beetle.
Yes.
Eating up, I mean, just the larval stage and the adult stage.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We're seeing a lot of.
And with small patches, especially backyard patches, if they don't mind hand picking, that's my first suggestion. They're, you know, that nice bright kind of almost day glow orange yellow color. And so they're usually fairly easy to see, and just hand pick them off, throw them in a bucket of soapy water or something like that. They drown faster that way. There are some insecticides that you may want to look at there. I believe there, in fact, I know there's a Bacillus thuringiensis product that's made for beetles. I believe, double check the labels, that that is good for Colorado potato beetle, but you may want to look into that. The other thing is some of the organic products like spinosyn, neem, I believe, are also labeled for Colorado potato beetles. So double check. Some of our old insecticides probably aren't as effective anymore against them.
No, they just don't work anymore.
Yeah,
seven and those.
Yeah, because they've just been exposed to them for so long. So you may want to look at some of those kinds of things. The other is, now it doesn't help if they're already on there, but I really, in the vegetable garden, my favorite way to protect against insects is floating row covers.
Yeah.
And just to physically keep those insects out and off to begin with. So
that's a good idea if they're not already in the ground.
If they're not in the ground, if they're not on the plant.
You don't want to jail them in either.
Right. And, you know, that's the other thing is people just throw that floating row cover or the Remate product over it, and then they don't tuck the edges down. Some things will crawl underneath and get it. But, yeah, that's a good way. The other thing, Larry, real quickly, while we were talking about potatoes, is Dr. Amanda Givens, who's our vegetable plant pathologist, sent out a notice this week that the weather conditions are right for the development of late blight disease on potatoes and tomatoes. So she was actually recommending, primarily for our commercial production and even our small commercial production, that they think about starting preventative sprays on that. But even for homeowners, if you've had a problem with potatoes and tomatoes with late blight disease the past few years, you may want to think about spraying for that. And the organic control for that are the copper products. So if you don't use copper products, then chlorothalonil would be the other one. But again, read and label directions and make sure it's labeled for use on food crops, so
all right,
on vegetables.
There we go. And lots of callers online here, so let's go to the phones. Mary Jane in Arborvitae, you are up. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I will take the answer off the air. We live in northern Wisconsin, very northern Wisconsin, and there is an incline down to our lake, about 70-80%. It is sandy soil. It's not sand, but it is sandy soil, and we would like a green covering for that incline down to the lake. And I will take your answer off the air, but we're looking for something that can be a ground covering for that incline down to the lake.
Okay.
And I'm not sure that I have a great suggestion for you without doing research on it, especially, although I know exactly what part of the state you're in. I'm not as familiar with what might be available. I would definitely look into natives, though. And there are a number of native plants that would work for that. So either call your local extension office, or what you might be more helpful up in that area is the DNR in that area. They may know a list of natives that might work for that situation. Larry, you may have some ideas too.
Well, there are some great places that sell native plants. Some of the nurseries that you might just check with the native plant nurseries too, because they'll have a really good idea about what's going to work in your area. And yeah. Frankly, native plants can really be beautiful. And
absolutely, yeah, that's what I would do. It would
help the roots go down deep.
Yep. Yeah. And if you can't find anybody, either email me or you can contact me in Kenosha and I can do some research on it. But off the top of my head, I'm sorry, I can't think of anything real quick.
And one off the top of my head, if you go to website, Prairie Nursery is actually Neil DeBull is on our show pretty often, and probably right on the website might even have some suggestions for sandy soil and incline. Mm-hmm.
You may want to have a soil test done also. We are always recommending that so that you know what the soil pH is. Pay attention to how much sun, shade, all those kinds of things, and I'm sure you can find something.
Thanks again for calling, Mary Jane. Doug in Westby, we're on to you now. Hi, Doug.
Yeah, good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I've got a question. I've planted some dwarf royal plum trees. They're about 6 years old. They've been good production. Now, this year, on two out of the three have started, two branches have completely lost their leaves, and the fruit has dropped, and the tips are just barely shooting out a new leaf structure. Defoliation is pretty rampant on two of the main producing branches. They face on the south and the east side. We didn't know if maybe it was winter kill or if it is a virus or a insect problem. On the one good tree, I found where a deer had punctured it with his antlers and discovered a white grub in one of the wounds. So everything I can look up is we've tried spraying it now with a rotenone pyrethrin. And I was just kind of calling in if you've experienced any of this, where the leaves completely yellow and then drop off and die.
So they're not eaten or chewed on at all. They're just yellowing and dropping off?
And then dropping off, right.
And just spotty in it? Or you've got a couple of branches, but then...
It kind of blanches from what they are, green to yellow. And they're, I want to explain... The whole branch looks like it's dying.
Okay. And have you looked along that branch? I mean, you said one of the other ones there was where you'd had some deer rub damage, but otherwise the branch itself on the ones that are bad look okay. It looks
branches
normal. You're not seeing any cracking, any
cracking
sunken areas.
On the one west side of the main trunk, but
of the one that's affected or the other one?
Of the ones that are affected. I have one good one that is pretty prolific, and it's a dark green, and these leaves are kind of not as dark and are looking a little anemic.
Okay. A couple of possibilities. Okay. One is that we are getting some calls and reports from the state. There is a bacterial disease that will affect the members of the plum cherry family, the prunus family. And the best thing to check for that would be to take a branch sample that's not completely dead, but showing the problems, and send that in to Dr. Brian Huddleston, our plant pathologist at the UW-Wisconsin Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. And he can culture that. His base price is $20, and he can tell you if that is a bacterial disease and then what may be going on or what kind of sprays, because what you've been spraying, an insecticide and a fungicide, won't help if it's a bacterial disease.
BT, Bacillus
cereus. No, that won't work. This is actually, when you're using a BT product, that is a bacteria, but that's where we're trying to kill different kinds of insects. It's used as an insecticide. In this case, it's possibly a bacteria that is the disease-causing organism, similar to, like, sometimes a fungus is what causes the plant disease. So that's the that would be the one thing I would look into. The other is that it could be some cold or winter injury. It could be some physical types of injury. You mentioned you did see some cracking and damage. It could also be, we're seeing lots of trees of all kinds that have had root system problems.
Yeah.
You know, too wet, too dry, you know, wet then dry. It's just been a bad year. So you may want to do a little more investigation. And as I said, it may be worth sending a sample to the plant disease diagnostic clinic, too.
Plant disease
diagnostic clinic.
I can get his address right to the local.
If you call the extension office, local office, they can give you that information. Or
if you just type in University of Wisconsin Plant Disease Clinic, it'll pop up.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. And John in West Bend, we are on to you now. Hi, John.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Three questions. Number one, I have these violets growing in my yard, and somebody was telling me that the violets could take over the whole lawn if I don't get rid of them. How can I do that?
They're the hardest thing to get rid of.
they are tough to get rid of. I mean, my philosophy is I like them, but I know a lot of people don't like them. There are some insecticides, herbicides, weed killers that will work with them. The product that I actually like to use the best is the generic name for it is Triclopyr, and it's Triclopyr. And you look on the herbicide, and that's the active ingredient. And I found that works pretty well on both Creeping Charlie and on violets. You usually have to treat more than once. So midsummer is not a good time to usually spray herbicides. So I would wait until usually September or so when things are really actively growing again. And then you probably are going to have to repeat treat next May.
Somebody told me about this Creeping Charlie. You could take Mule Team Borax and mix it as a combination.
No. That was a popular recommendation probably about 10, 15 years ago. And yes, Creeping Charlie is more sensitive to boron, the element boron. However, the problem is if you get a little too much boron in there, all plants are sensitive to that, and it causes toxicity, and you can't grow anything in that spot. So we don't recommend that. So you don't want to deal with that.
One of our listeners tried that and literally took her whole lawn out.
Oh my gosh! Yeah,
she couldn't grow anything on it.
Yeah. Well, so sometimes we learn the hard way.
Second question is state fair zinnias. Now, I've kind of staked them, and they're only up about 2 feet right now. And I should continue probably staking them, but the leaves always turn very dry and are dead. Should I put some fungicide on it? Like
well, do they get that powdery white on them first?
Fungal? Would that do it? Fungal?
Well, probably. It sounds like they're getting powdery mildew.
Yeah.
And one of the things we recommend for powdery mildew is try to space your plants apart so you get better air circulation through them.
Yeah, I have that now, about 16 inches apart.
Okay. The other is, unless you really love that cultivar, State Fair, I'd find a different one that was resistant to powdery mildew because some of the new varieties of zinnias are much more resistant.
Oh. Now, how about these little holes in the leaves of roses? Should I start spraying that now, and can I do it when it's wet out like this?
Well, you know what? I always tell everybody, don't start grabbing a spray. Find out what's wrong first. So figure out why you have those holes in the roses. Is it an insect that you're seeing? Is it, even these windy days can whip those leaves and cause damage. So figure out, try to find a bug first. Sometimes you even have to go out at 10 o'clock at night and look for a bug. And then once you know what the insect is, then we can tell you what to spray.
Send that in to somebody?
You can go to your local, or contact your local county extension office.
Okay.
All right.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And if you get a photo of an insect, you can send it to Phil at the plant at the Insect Diagnostic Lab, Phil Pelletieri.
Or a lot of the, depending on the county office,
a lot of us
do that too.
Yeah, absolutely. That might be the quickest way. Drop by and...
Yeah, do that. A lot of them have Master Gardener volunteers. In fact, that I have a Master Gardener volunteer that's answering gardening questions
right now
today.
Barb Larson, our guest today, horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller. Dave Potratz, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have an email from Linda from Winona, Minnesota, and she wonders, what's the best way to keep the slugs from eating holes in the hosta or other pests from ruining them? The hosta looks great with the cool weather, but all the rain is going to bring out the slugs.
Actually, I should say off air, I kind of looked at Larry and said, don't grow hostas, but actually, there are some hosta varieties that have a thicker leaf, and the slugs don't like them as well. So there are some that you can get away with. But I like some of the different ways to trap the slugs. And the kind of old favorite is the old stale beer. Don't use the designer beer. Use the cheap stuff. And basically just put it in like an old cottage cheese or similar kind of container. The slugs crawl in because they're attracted by the beer and they die happy that way. There are also another way to do it is just lay boards down and the slugs at night will crawl under those boards. And then in the morning, if you're not too quick, you know, queasy about it, you can just smash them or kill the slugs that way. So I would stick with that. I wouldn't use any of the poison baits or anything. I'm always afraid about dogs and kids and stuff getting into those. I did have one lady, though, once that told me that she used the beer and she had a puppy and the puppy got into it and got really sick with the slugs in the beer. So you may want to be careful with little kids. But that would be the best way to deal with it.
We have an email from Tracy and Nina, who has three small blueberry bushes on the west side of her house. Thanks for the mulching information. In a previous show, they are deeply mulched in Cyprus. Should we ever dry out enough to need to hold moisture in the soil? My question is about two bushes that are three seasons old. Fantastic amount of flowers. However, it looks as though I'm going to get one blueberry.
Oh.
Different varieties of cross-pollination, as was recommended. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about why the flowers dropped and then the buds turned brown instead of developing berries?
Well, I guess my first question is, did she see much bee activity in there? Because they would have to be, even if you had the two different kinds, which you need for good cross-pollination, if you didn't have those pollinators in there, that may be the problem. And I want to also kind of make a quick comment on the mulch. Mulch is great. Blueberries like moist soils. But be real careful not to have that cypress mulch piled up against the crown or the base of the plant, because you can actually get rots and those kinds of things in it. So make sure it goes to nothing that you get at the base of the plant. So
there you go. Steve and Camp Douglas, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a problem with rose beetles. They're on the raspberry.
Rose chafers.
Yeah. Those, can you tell me how I can go about getting rid of them? And I'll take my answer off the air. And I'd like to say hi to Sally and Dave. Bye.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
And hi to Sally and Dave.
All right. Actually, our friend Phil Pelletieri was just talking about these on our horticulture update yesterday that we have for all the educators in the state. And Phil recommends the best thing is a trap. And there is a rose chafer trap. And he actually even recommends that there is I think it's Arizona Biological Supply. And he recommends that that's probably the only place you can get the trap, but that seems to work the best. Now we don't recommend traps for Japanese beetles and things, but for the rose chafers, this seems to be a great option.
Let's go to Sally and Hayward next. Hi, Sally.
Thank you. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a positive problem, so to speak. I have beautiful deep purple Siberian iris growing in full sun in my butterfly garden, and I've discovered at the edge of the woods beautiful multicolor iris growing in the shade. Now, my question is, can I transplant the iris that are in the shade into my full sun butterfly garden? Should I take a chance on doing that?
Larry's making a face. I'll just tell you all.
Oh, is he? Uh-oh.
So I think we're going to disagree slightly. Okay. I guess I would want to figure out for sure what kind it was, but my guess is that you probably, iris can pretty much grow from full sun to part shade. And so I would want
give
to
give it a shot.
I wouldn't dig them all up, but I would certainly give it a try. Yeah. I'm a great believer in gardening. You give it a try.
Okay. Thank you very much.
I wouldn't. So much. I wouldn't plant them all, though.
No,
I wouldn't move them all right away, anyway.
And you may want to even put them in a little shade cloth or something over them, or make sure you give them a little extra moisture, especially. That probably is going to be the bigger problem.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had a photo sent in on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, and we took a look at that. There are some spiders on an indoor plant. They, it's the numbers are like spider mite numbers.
Yeah. And
the color's a little off.
Yeah, the color looks off, so I'm not sure how much that's from the photo. And we didn't get much other information other than, what can I do or what are these? So we're guessing that it's an indoor plant, and it looks like a lot of spider mites in the webbing on an indoor plant. So for spider mites, I go over to the sink or over to the shower and give them a good shower and try to knock a lot of them out. You know, the other thing is if you don't immediately take it outside, but you could take this plant out into a shady area out on a deck or something like that. Don't put it in full sun. Keep it out of the wind. Take it in and out for 2 or 3 days and get it kind of used to being outside. If you then have it outside, the beneficial insects will quite often come in and take, and you won't have any spider mites. If you can't do that and you've done the washing off and hosing off about once a week, you can also use an insecticidal soap product for it.
There you go. Let's go to Kate in Menasha. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have some very old peonies that came with the 80-year-old house I live in. And by and large, they're extremely healthy, but every year they produce little tiny buds that look like the end of a matchstick. They look like little charred buds, and I don't know if I should do anything, and if so, what?
Do you get any blooms at all, or are they all doing that?
No, I actually get a good number of beautiful blooms.
Okay. There are a couple of diseases that will affect the peony buds, and they're not uncommon. So what you may want to think about doing is, first of all, trim those out so you get rid of them, get them. Don't put them in a compost pile. Just either burn them, bury them, send them off to, a municipal compost. So you take care of it. And then in the fall, do a really good cleanup in your garden, especially of the peony foliage and everything. So just try to basically good cleanup and see if that takes care of it. If it doesn't, you might want to consider some fungicides, but I would start with just good cleanup first and see if that takes care of it.
Okay, thank you.
I tend to get that every year or so in my peonies, and just a good cleanup takes care of it.
All right, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot for calling, Kate. And Joan in Green Bay, on to you now. Hi, Joan.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a question about mulch around trees. My husband wants to put cocoa beans around. Is there something better than cocoa beans, or are they fine?
Do you have dogs?
No.
Okay. Cocoa beans were really, really popular, and they're okay. They tend to mat down, though, I think, more than a lot of the other mulches do.
And they also get a lot of fungus.
They do. So it's one of those, to me, mulches around trees are more an aesthetic decision than anything else. Any mulches you use, the important thing is to don't pile them up against the trunk of the trees and the shrubs. Have them no deeper than about 3 inches deep or so as you go away from the tree. And make sure you stir the mulches up, I would say, at least 2 or 3 times every summer. So is it really horrible to have cocoa beans? You know, it's not horrible, but they've really kind of gone out of favor because most people just don't like them because they mat and they can cause problems. And you definitely, if you have dogs in the area, you don't want to use them.
They
would be better.
Well, you can use almost any kind of bark mulch or...
Yeah, wood chips, as long as they're, you know, partly decomposed. You don't want fresh chips. Shredded bark is okay. You can use compost, too. I'd say there's a huge variety of things that are available for you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Okay.
Thanks very much for calling. Yeah, I tried cocoa beans. And, I mean, the first day and, when they're... Mm-hmm. Like, the first week, they were great. And then I was like, okay, here is this big white mold all over
it.
And,
yeah, yeah. They used to be used, especially in roses, a lot. And they just didn't do real well. So
let's go to Mary Lynn in Neshkoro next. Hi, Mary Lynn.
Hi, it's Marilyn.
Marilyn,
but
sorry.
Close.
All right.
I have a question about fertilizer and if it leaches out of the soil or how fast. I fertilized my garden, the root crops mainly, and I gardened in sandy soil. And now we've had this week of torrential rains, and I'm wondering how long will I have to fertilize it sooner than I would normally?
The phosphorus and potassium do not leach, so they don't really move out of the soil. The one you'd have to be worried about would be the nitrogen. And I would just, instead of adding a lot more nitrogen, I just carefully keep an eye on those vegetables and see if they're not growing really well. If the color is, you know, a little paler green, then you may want to side dress in a few weeks, but I would just kind of keep an eye on things.
Okay.
I think we have to be careful about not throwing too much fertilizer on all the time.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
And the other real quick thing is hopefully you've got a lot of organic matter in your soil, so compost, because that will actually help hold those nutrients there and prevent it from washing away.
That every year.
Yeah, okay.
Good, then you're probably fine.
Thanks a lot for calling, Marilyn. Appreciate it. Jessica in Muskego emails us. She says, I have a small ornamental flowering crab tree. Gets white flowers that bloom in spring in our landscape. Some of the branches are growing toward the ground. Is this normal? Should we trim them back? If so, when would you trim?
Well, I would say that's not the usual.
No, sure isn't.
I don't know that I've ever had anybody tell me that they're growing towards the ground. Usually you get that they're growing straight up. Yes, I would prune those out, and you could do them anytime this summer. I wouldn't do it when it was really rainy. I'd wait till, you know, a drier day, but they could be pruned now.
And then Abby in Middleton emailed, we have a lot of rain so far this summer, and in the last 2 weeks, our yard has exploded with mushrooms. Anything I can do to stop the spread or prevent them from coming back in the future? It's becoming very challenging with our dog to find a mushroom-free zone for him to play.
Yeah, no, there isn't any way. You have organic matter someplace down in the soil, and it is decomposing, and the mushrooms are the flowers of the fungus that are helped decompose things. I have dogs, too, so I have to be really careful. You can either mow them over or go stomp them down to make it so they aren't as enticing to the dog.
Let's go to John in Milwaukee next. John, hello to you.
Good morning, Larry and guests. I've got a question regarding my jade plants.
Okay.
Which I keep indoors during the winter, of course, bring them outside, acclimate them to the warm temperatures, and then bring them in full sun. Now, once I bring them in full sun, they just love it. They, the edges of the leaves get red, and they get a nice deep green color. Bring them inside in the fall, and by May, before I think about bringing them outside, the leaves get very rubbery and wrinkly, and a very pale green color as opposed to a nice bright green.
Mm-hmm.
I don't overwater them. I water them maybe once a month. I have several jade plants, so they're in different light conditions in the house, and no matter if they get a full southern exposure or a northern exposure, they all get leathery leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Am I doing something wrong?
No, I don't think so. The plants just, that's the difference. You know, when you take them outside, the leaves are, that they're producing and the thickness of the outer, what's called the cuticle, may be a little thicker because they're outside. They're used to more light. When you move a plant inside, even if you move it into a bright, sunny, southern window, you're basically cutting the amount of light they get in half. Mm-hmm. So the what's happening is in some plants, they'll drop those leaves and then reform other leaves. In the jade plant, it's not, but that's how the jade is basically acclimating or dealing with the difference in light and moisture and all of those things between outdoors and indoors. So the things are living. They may not look quite as pretty as you like inside, but it sounds like you're doing fine. Don't worry about it.
Thank you. You made me feel good today.
Okay. Okay, hey, that's great.
Well, wonderful. Thanks, John. Thank you very much for calling. We have Jane in Amro up next with a question. So let's go to Jane in Amro. Hi, Jane.
Good morning. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a question about an evasive a little vine that's growing in my peonies and up my phlox and irises. It has a fine stem. It crawls across the ground, and I've had it for about 2 years, and I pull and pull, and it comes back. It's doing really well in my garden, but I consider it a weed. I didn't plant it there. Do you know what it is, and how can I get rid of it?
Does it? Have you seen it flower? Does it have a flower kind of like a morning glory?
No, it has no flower at all.
Oh, you haven't seen a flower? Because my guess was bindweed, which is a very common weed. And do you mulch your plants at all?
Yes, I do.
Okay. I guess I would look at mulching. If you're not seeing flowers, you're not producing seed, because that's the next thing is to try to prevent that. If that's not it, you could always take a sample into your local county extension office.
Okay.
Take about a good foot of the stem with the leaves and everything on it. If it ever flowers, that makes it even easier to identify. And they can identify it for you and then make a much better recommendation for how to manage it.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Land O'Lakes, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Yeah, I've got a blue spruce all the new growth on the ends are curled up. I don't know. I don't see a worm or spider or anything, but I'm wondering, is it a spruce bud worm or is it some red spider?
Okay, they're curly, twisty, the new soft growth.
Yes.
Did you use any herbicide or could there be anything like that in the area?
No.
Okay. I guess those are the first things I think of.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll also get that just from weather conditions. This may be one, if you wouldn't, it doesn't sound like any of a budworm or something like that. This is another one where it may be really helpful to take a sample to your extension office so they can see it and or send it to the Wisconsin Disease Diagnostic Clinic.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
thank
thanks
you.
A lot for calling. And Judy in Appleton, on to you now. Hi, Judy.
Hello. My question is, can you use straw or mulching for mulching your garden plants? I just have always having to have straw or hay down.
Can you? Do you have to use it, or is
that, was that keeping the rain in? Now with all the rain that we're having, will our tomatoes die from all the rain?
They shouldn't, unless if they're standing in water all the time.
Well, that's what I'm asking. I have straw on them now. Should I take the straw away?
Okay.
I missed on that one, too. I thought you were talking about adding.
Okay. All right.
I have it there now, but I want to know, should I take it off?
So your concern is it keeping it too wet? I don't know. You're going to get to investigate. I pull it away. I would say if it dries up, it doesn't continue raining, you're probably okay. A lot of times it'll kind of decompose faster that way, too. If it's really matting down and really staying really wet and soggy, then you may want to pull it back.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, I'd look that one over a little more closely.
And, yeah. I mean, sometimes it's really hard without actually being there and looking at it, so.
I usually don't mulch my tomatoes anyway.
See, I always mulch mine because I recommend to prevent the some of those leaf diseases because of
splashing
the splashing up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it's a good
but
point.
I tend to use, like, newspapers and
well,
then.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
If I do it, that would be it. That would be what I'd use. By the way, you can join in if you have a question for us at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And we've got some open lines we can get you on pretty quickly. Eric in Beloit, it's your turn. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I got rid of my rototiller, and I just use a long fork now. I was just wondering the benefits to using a long fork.
Absolutely. In fact, right in Rock County, the agriculture agent there, Jim Studi, says that he is very, very against, he's a soil specialist, against using rototillers all the time. So Jim would think you're doing absolutely the right thing. So, yeah, it is. Constant rototilling actually can destroy the structure of the soil. And so instead, especially in smaller gardens, using a garden fork and working in your compost or other kinds of organic matter, great idea.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
All right.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Lori emailed, we have an ornamental cherry tree. They live right outside of Iroquois, rural area. Last year it developed boluses, and we have removed as many as possible and sprayed the tree with 7. This year it's, oh, and then I went and lost the.
Down a little farther, I think, from there.
A little further there. Okay. No, not that one.
One more.
One more. Here we go.
Technology. I love it.
Yeah, on my computer screen, I accidentally knocked the note off the screen, but here we have it back.
Even more.
Okay, so they sprayed the tree with 7. This year it even has more of those boluses. What do we do?
Well, I'm wondering, what is a bolus? Do you have an idea, Larry? I'm wondering, is it the black growths?
Well, that's what I had in my head.
That's what I did, too. So we'll go with that. And if it's not, let us know. But it sounds like the big kind of black growths that get on the stems and the twigs, and that is not an insect. That's a disease called black knot, K-N-O-T. And there are fungicides you can use. Once you see those kind of black knot sections, that's where it's already invaded and it is expanded. You want to prune out those areas that have that black knot disease. And if it gets really bad, you may find you want to replace the tree.
Yeah.
We do have a nice fact sheet on black knot on our Wisconsin Horticulture
yes,
website.
A good one.
So the website for that is hort.uwex.edu. And if you just type in the search engine black knot, it will come up and it will tell you all what to do. But it's basically prune it out and then use a fungicide.
And if it's
but
too
not
bad,
now.
If it's too bad, you prune right at the base of the tree.
Yes, yeah, that one cut prune at the ground line.
Okay. All right. Barb Larson, our guest horticulture educator with UW Extension in Kenosha County. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have an email from Nancy, and she wonders, is there any non-chemical way to deal with bugs on grapes and vines?
Remember that floating row cover? That's the best way I know. In fact, it's really the only way to do it.
Yeah, if you're going to do it with a non-chemical way.
Non-chemical way, that would be it. And when we're talking about chemical, I mean, it's organic and synthetic chemicals. Organics are chemicals, too.
Absolutely. But I'm going to plug again the Extension publication on growing grapes in Wisconsin because that is a great publication.
Yes, it is. It is.
So you might go to the Learning Store. That's where it is. UW
yes.
Extension Learning Store and look for the publication on growing grapes in Wisconsin.
Right. Yeah. It's Learning Store, all one word, .uwex.edu. I think I give those out a lot.
Actually, we have it posted on my Facebook page. So if you go to the Larry Mueller Show, look under today's program, and you click on that, it'll pop right up.
Oh, perfect.
So you don't have to remember. And Robin and Madison, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. Wonderful show. I love it. Listen every week.
Thanks.
Plan my lunch around it. So I have a raised garden bed. It's 4x8, 4x9, and I have 4 tomato plants in it, all of which are doing really, really well, planted at the same time, except for one in the last week. The leaves have rolled in, like when a kid does a rolls their tongue, and the leaves have gotten really tough. It's still, you know, it's still growing, but I've checked. There are no bugs, nothing underneath the leaves. I've shaken it. I don't use chemicals.
Ignore it. It's something called, I'm pretty sure it's something what it's called physiologic leaf roll, and it sometimes happens. Some varieties do it more than others.
Okay.
And it will still grow to produce tomatoes just fine. In fact, it will probably produce other leaves that are, quote, normal.
There you go.
Okay. Can I ask you a related question?
Sure.
You know, I know from growing larger gardens when I had them, you know, the importance of rotating your crops. If you're dealing with a raised garden bed, there's only so much rotation you can do.
Yeah.
I compost in the fall. After I turn it under, I compost in the spring. And I try and move things around. But is there anything else I should be doing to that bed to ensure it stays healthy?
No. You're basically doing everything you can, although we tell everyone, try to rotate your crops even in a small garden or in a small backyard. We know that it really... it helps some, but I don't know that it helps that much. But it's still a good. It's in that. It's a good idea to do it. You know, we know realistically you can't move them. You know, big spaces and really do a true crop rotation. Sounds like you're doing great. What you're doing,
okay.
Keep it up.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Kathy in Port Washington, on to you now. Hi, Kath.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have Eastern Redbud in my front yard, gets full sun. It's its third year, and this year it started to get buds on it. It grew like crazy last year. The buds never did anything, and we noticed that we got vertical splits in the bark. One appeared and then more appeared.
Yeah.
Oh, what is it?
I can't... I would guess it's not an insect or disease problem. My guess is that it's a weather or environmental related problem. Where you are, even though you're close to the lake, the red buds are really kind of borderline hardy for us in Wisconsin. So hopefully you got it I think the best way to get red buds is from somebody else that's in the neighborhood or a friend in Wisconsin so that you'll get a variety that's really nice and cold hardy. And you may find even, although the top has died, I've had red buds where the top part dies and then they resprout from the root system because the roots have established well enough. So if you didn't, you know, if the roots survived, it's possible you might get some resprouting. You'll end up with kind of a red bud shrub kind of thing. But I sounds like with the splitting in the trunk and nothing coming out, it doesn't sound good. And I would guess it's weather related.
Okay, very good.
Okay,
thank you.
Thanks for calling. Ken and Nina, your turn. Hi, Ken. Ken, are you there? Wait a second. Did I get him on? No, I didn't. Let's try again. Hi, Ken.
Oh, hi. Have you got me?
Yeah, I got you now. Thanks for calling.
I've got a tall spruce on the lot line. It's about 60 feet tall. And we got new neighbors, and they built a fence. So we had to cut the lower branches out.
Mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering what I can plant underneath that. Possibilities I have are hosta, ajuga, or lily of the valley.
Any of those that you like the looks of would be fine.
Okay.
Just because it's an evergreen or a conifer doesn't mean that it makes the soil horribly acidic or anything like that. They are a little more shallow rooted, so there may be a little more competition, but you basically can grow anything that'll take the shade that's under there. Probably the ajuga will be the most aggressive grower in that area if you want to fill in something really quickly.
That's what I was leaning towards. That blossoms all summer long.
Yeah. But it will also spread out into your lawn, so.
Yeah.
Be careful.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I was concerned about the pH of the ground.
Nah. Nah.
Nope. Not a problem.
All right. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. And Roger and Toma, we turn now to you. Hi, Roger.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Okay, here's what I got. Last year, I had a real infestation of striped Colorado potato beetles. I found something to deal with those. This year, I've got a small tan-colored insect about one-fourth to one-third of an inch long, and it is a flying insect. They are in my potatoes and my beans. I wondered if you have any idea what I got.
An inch long. It's going through the, and nothing is jumping into my mind immediately as to what it is.
Okay,
one-third to one-half inch long,
yeah,
and it's tan,
tan,
and it flies.
Yeah.
You
pick one off and put it on your hand, and you go to touch it again, and it'll fly away.
Is it stripes down the back?
No, it doesn't. No stripes. Maybe it's something harmless. I don't know.
But. Yeah, I just can't tell you. I don't know.
If you had a digital camera, you could take a picture of it, and either post it on my Facebook page, or just send it directly to email it to Phil Pelletieri at the Insect Diagnostic Lab. He'll give you an answer pretty quick.
Or catch a few of them and take them into your local cooperative extension office.
That's the other
county office.
That might be just as quick and just as useful.
Yeah,
I'll do that. I sprayed them with the stuff I use on my striped Colorado potato beetles, and it doesn't seem to bother them.
Yeah, well, that's why, it really is useful to kind of figure out what you got first before you spray. First, to know whether it's even a harmful insect.
Yeah.
And then secondly, so that you can match, if it is harmful, something that's effective against it.
Okay, very good.
Okay,
all right, thanks.
Thanks
a lot for calling. And Vicki in Mount Horeb, on to you now. Hi, Vicki.
Hello. I have a question about a weed that has been growing in, it's under a birch tree garden type of area, and I've got a bleeding heart and some other things, but this weed looks like a sensitivity plant or like a locust. There's many, many tiny little leaves on each branch. It is not sensitive. I mean, when you touch it, it doesn't curl up, but it just seems to be prolific, and I keep pulling it out, and I feel like maybe I'm spreading it by doing that. Do you know what that might be?
Boy, this is in the... Barb has to really come up with all these today. I'm not so good. I've not been real good at pulling all this out.
Okay.
Lots of little leaves, and it's in the shade?
It's a dappled. It's sort of a dappled shade area. Yeah, and I also have a clematis there, too, and it's growing in amongst that, and I keep yanking them out.
Yeah.
What are the leaves like?
We have a locust tree. It's not a honey locust, I don't think, but, all the little multi-leaves on a stem. Just tiny, tiny little leaflets.
I think I'm envisioning correctly, but I'm not coming up with something.
Not sure
it could be.
It's the only place I'm having trouble with it. I mean, I have other landscape areas, and it seems to just be right there.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
This is like it seems like the standard answer here this morning is either take a sample into your local extension office or take some photos and
send them.
Yeah, you can send them to me, and I can take a look at them.
Yeah, okay.
Both kind of distant and close up. If you've seen any flowers on it, that makes it even easier to identify.
Right, which I have not, but
okay.
I try not to let it.
I'm just
get that far. But okay.
And if I can't, then we have several weed specialists and also all the other horticulture educators in the state, and we usually can come up with it.
And how do they contact you, Barbara?
Probably the best, easiest way is just go to Kenosha County Extension. If you Google that, it should come up with our county webpage.
All right. There we go. And Don in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Don.
Oh, good morning. I have a sumac tree in a pot, and this summer it has some roots at the surface, and it's now sprouting little sumac trees, and I'm wondering what I can do to get these little trees to grow on their own.
Sumac is almost like a weed. You shouldn't have any problem getting it. And so it's just, you could even dig those out, divide them, make sure you've got some roots with it, and they should take off. It's typical for the sumacs are what are called a colonizing shrub, so they spread and constantly out along the root system and are always sending up new shoots and new stems.
Okay, should these shoots, I put one in just plain water, and that didn't work really well. I just cut a section of root.
No. Yeah, most plants don't like growing in just straight water because it can actually even drown the roots, so put it in potting soil.
Yeah, you are going to have luck.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm pretty sure of that because it will grow, and you'll get awfully tired of all those little ones growing up over time, for sure. Thanks, Don. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Barb Larson, our guest today. Barb is a horticulture educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension in Kenosha County. Great to have her with us here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along for this edition of Garden Talk. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Barb Larson, horticulture educator with the University of Wisconsin Extension in Kenosha County. And certainly lots of fun when she's here and lots of fun to have you listening in and calling in. You can call in with a question or email us. Call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. You can also go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post a question or a photo there. We'll be happy to answer that. I see we have another one on the Facebook page right now, which has to do with repeating the method for trapping moles with a bacon trap. And I certainly know how to do that. I'll probably post that online, but it involves a tub of some sort and some bacon and a rat trap. And if you've got an active tunnel, you find an active tunnel, you open the hole in the tunnel, and then you put some fresh bacon on a rat trap and set it near the hole or next to the hole, cover the whole thing with a something, so it's dark.
Okay.
And people have had very good success with this, and it's safe because, you're not going to have animals tipping, getting into the trap, the rat trap. So somebody said they trapped 9 moles that way off a lawn. And usually there are only one or two moles in a lawn.
Yeah.
They just make a lot of tunnels.
They do.
But that's how you do it.
Interesting.
I'll post that as well when I get the chance. We have an email. Let's see, a couple of emails here. I just want to get one here that has to do with perennials. Marion emailed, I have 2 perennials I'll need to move because I didn't pick the site I planted them in very well. One's a perennial geranium. It's in too sunny a location. The other is a peony that's too close to a large hosta. It's half buried in the leaves of the hosta. What's the best time to move them? Anything special to do?
Okay. Basically, most perennials are transplanted either in fall or in spring. The kind of rule of thumb is if it's a spring blooming perennial, early summer blooming perennial, you transplant it in the fall. If it's a midsummer late, then you do it in the spring. Actually, I'm kind of surprised. I have perennial geranium in full beating sun, and it's just
it's
happy as
great.
Can be. And And I actually have kind of a loamy, sandy soil, so it's actually surprising. But if yours isn't happy, it could be just the variety. You should be able to move it this fall or early in the spring. Just make sure you dig the most of the root system and everything up with it. Peonies don't like to be moved, so if this is a full sun area where the peony is maybe doing okay, and the problem is the hosta, I think I'd rather move the hosta rather
easier
than the peony.
Move.
Yeah, it's easier to move and it'll deal with it better. But if it's more of a shady location, the peony won't be happy. And so that one, again, you could do fall or early spring, either one. If you do it in spring, you're probably not going to get any bloom that year. So,
Mike in Winchester, on to you now. Hi, Mike. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I don't have a garden, but I got a question about a pear trees. I just put in some apples and pear trees last year.
Okay.
And we had all kinds of buds on it, and I had quite a few pears on it. And then my established pear tree, I had 2 years ago, I had just enormous amount of pears. And then last year, I had the same thing. I had a lot of pears and small, and then they fell off or disappeared for some reason, and I just wondering if, and this year it's doing the same thing. Now, I only got a couple on my established pear tree, which has been around for about, I don't know, 6-7 years.
Okay. And do you normally get a lot of fruit on your established one every year? In the past, has it had good fruit production every year?
Except for last year and this year.
Okay. Let's see, other than, it looks fine, other than you're not getting good fruits on it.
Right, and then I just put in two new pear trees. This is the second year now. It was one is a summer crisp, and then another one is a
yeah.
And then the established one is a Bartlett.
Okay, and you're seeing good bee activity.
My apple trees are just loaded.
Okay, all right. I'm not sure what might be going on with it. We did have that kind of cold snap. It could certainly be some cold damage to those blossoms. I think pears are more sensitive to that than you find with the apple trees are. So I'm wondering if you had a little cold damage to it. We've also had quite a bit of overcast, so though you may have some bees, it could be not real good pollination. Could be a number of different possibilities. There is a publication that's on growing pears and things, and that may be helpful to you too. And if you see kind of this continuing on, you may want to get a sample even into the extension office.
Yeah, and it's the Learning Store is where the pair.
The learningstore.uwex.edu or off of Larry's Facebook
page. Yeah, just go to my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show and click on the little icon there and you'll go right to it.
Yeah, but I think it may be primarily an environmental kind of question. It's cold.
This has happened. Lots of other people have had the same issue,
okay.
And it's this dumb weather that we've had that I think has really created the problems.
You know, it was really tough. Well, I'm in the southern part of the state, but you know, we had those days that were 95 to 100 degrees, and then it's like
just the opposite.
Then it went really cold, and things kind of pushed out really quickly, and then it got cold, and we had a lot of weird damage this year.
Yeah, we sure did. Adam in St. Charles, Minnesota, we are on to you now. Hi, Adam.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My challenge I'm having is year after year I have quite a few ants in my lawn. I live in a newer development. It hasn't been established for that long, less than 15 years, where they came in, scraped all the black dirt away, you know, did the re-landscaping of the ground, and then built the houses and brought in just a little bit of the black dirt back. And I've tried a couple different chemicals to try to get rid of the ants, and the problem is they get so bad that they start finding a way into the house once in a while. So I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Well, I know Philip Pelletieri, who's our entomologist, always talks about if you're going to try to control ants in a lawn, you've got to get down and get where that queen is, which means you've really got to open up or, you know,
take a rod.
Basically, yeah, and that I've done it. I've used like a rebar and to get down to get the insecticide down in there. Now, I know there's a great publication that actually is a co-publication with the University of Minnesota and the University of Wisconsin Extension on ants and ant management, ant control. So you may want to look for that.
But if you if you can take a rod and just drive it right down that hole and then pour materials in there, then you're going to, once you get the queen, then the rest.
Yeah, then it'll take care of the rest of the colony.
Now, the challenge is that there's many mounds in my yard, you know, small mounds. Do I have to do it like every so many square feet?
Well, you're going to have to try to figure out where that queen is, where the, I guess they call it a chamber, where the queen is. And it, you could have multiple mounds, but you've got only, you know, maybe one or two main hills, or it's probably maybe more than that. But you may want to kind of watch or even, you know, push that rod down and try to find where the really big chamber is. Believe me, if you go in there, the ants will come pouring out. They will be unhappy that you're disturbing them.
I will certainly give that a try, and that helps me. You know, previously I've been just using a broadcast method of
that won't do it.
that's good to know. I knew what I was doing wasn't working properly, so we got to try something else.
That's why.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Yeah, thanks, Adam. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We have Kathleen in West Allis. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. About 3 weeks ago, I planted a dappled willow tree.
Yep.
And I'm wondering if I should fertilize it. I went online to do a research on that question, and I get conflicting reports. Some say you shouldn't fertilize it on the first year. And I'm just wondering what your opinion is. Right.
No, don't fertilize it in the first year. In fact, you don't have to fertilize it at all unless it's not growing very well. The vast majority of, we have good soils in most places in Wisconsin. We've got adequate nutrients in many places, and you don't need to fertilize trees and shrubs regularly at all.
Okay.
So unless it's starting to not grow well.
Leave it alone.
Leave it alone, yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks for calling. Sue in Westfield. Hello.
Hi, I have a question about black walnut, and I'm trying to get the most current information. We bought property, and we garden a lot, and there are black walnut trees on this property. So I'm trying to figure out if there's any value in getting rid of the trees in terms of future planting.
Take a long time to get rid of the jug lawn, even if you cut the trees down.
It does. A lot of the length of time that jug lawn is in the soil depends on the kind of soil, what the drainage is. If it's a wet soil, it takes longer for that jug lawn to kind of work out or dissipate. Yeah. So there's a lot of variation in that. I will tell you, and I admit this is anecdotal, I had a master gardener that I worked with that had a black walnut tree in their backyard. They decided they were tired of fighting with it, you know, trying to grow things around it. She cut it down. You could actually see where the roots were because they'd have stunted areas and then it would grow okay. And it took probably about 2 to 3 years before she stopped seeing the differences. But I want to say that, first of all, is anecdotal. And the other is that a lot of it varies with the soil type you have in the drainage. Mm-hmm. So you may want to look into plants that are a little more tolerant of it, trying to plant away from those.
You got to get a long ways away.
Yeah, a long ways away. And
way beyond the drip line.
Yeah, yeah. I had a guy once that called me. He put raised beds in to try to get away from it. And he was having trouble with his tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, the squirrels were planting the walnuts in the raised bed.
Oh, my.
And then he even laughed. He said, well, that's because I throw the walnuts at them. They're getting even with me.
So
you know, I read someplace that it was like 80 feet from the tree.
Well, you have to figure that the root system for a tree can be 3 to 5 times the height of the tree. That's the distance it can go out. So it's a long way. So you may want to, you know, just pick and choose what you grow. There are lists. We have one with, Dr. Laura Joel put one together. There are all sorts of lists about things that are tolerant to juglone. Again, that varies based on what your soil conditions are and how fast that juglone breaks down in the soil. So
this is pretty heavy clay.
Yeah. And again, it's there's just a wide variety. It doesn't seem to be the clay versus sand. It seems to do more with the amount of moisture that's held in the soil.
Okay.
So I think it's kind of up to you. I mean, they're great trees, but it's frustrating if you're trying to garden around them.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling.
Good luck.
George in Madison, your turn. Hi, George.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks for calling.
I have a question about my tomato garden. I bought bags of, I believe, oak leaf compost from Oakbrook Gardens.
Okay.
And I wanted to mix that in to make kind of a natural bed for my tomatoes, and I added cow manure and chicken manure and some peat and some pottery soil, or what do you call it? Anyway, potting soil. But 4 out of the 25 plants look like they're retreating, wilting, not being receptive. And I didn't know if the nitrogen reversal process in the leaves had not been completed and they are sucking the nitrogen out of the plants.
That could be the case if they haven't...
Are they yellow and stunted?
They're just limp and green, and they've light green, and they've shrunk from their original purchase. Those were individually potted plants and very healthy and vibrant. Now they're retreating.
Okay. Instead of that, I'm more wondering if there's something with the roots and it being too wet or something along those lines. I mean, usually there's not, you've got a lot of nitrogen in there, and I'm getting the manures and everything were composted?
Well, they were mixed in I do it in a well, like, but beneath the plant rather than the whole garden.
But they were fresher manures?
Yeah, fresh manures.
Oh, that's
the problem right there.
What? Is it too rich?
Yeah, fresh manure means what would referred to as kind of like hot nitrogen. It will burn plants. It will damage the root systems. Yeah, manure is fine, but you always want to use composted manure. It has to have to rot it out a little bit. We also have some food safety issues when you're using fresh manures. Because we have to worry about bacterial contamination and that kind of thing with E. coli and other things.
So I dilute this manure process so it's not as hot. That should give them a recovery.
I don't know that they will. It depends on how much damage you've got to them.
Okay. You? The second question was sunflowers in vegetable gardens can be attractive, but does the bright color of a sunflower attract the Japanese beetle and therefore should not be used in conjunction with a vegetable garden?
No, the color does not attract Japanese beetles. I don't know that they're any more friendly to those or not. However, interestingly, since we just had that black walnut question, sunflowers produce a chemical similar to what black walnuts do that actually prevent other plants from growing around them. So the problem with sunflowers in a vegetable garden is they may actually stunt and cause problems with your vegetables.
Okay. I appreciate your answer.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And if you took that mixture of the manure and the leaves and everything, and if you'd put that in a pile and composted...
Yep. Leave
a
it.
Year. Mm-hmm. Well, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, that. And you know, when he first called and said that, I thought, man, these things should be growing like crazy. But yeah, you've got to decompose this stuff first, or start partly decompose it.
Pat in Waupaca has a question. Hi, Pat.
Hi. I have a large area behind my house. It's at least a half an acre, probably more, that when we moved there, it was full of perennials, daisies, irises, peonies, daylilies, everything back there. And we have paths going through it. But there's a lot of Virginia creeper, and I don't know how I can get rid of that.
Well, it's a woody vine, so it would be anything that would control woody vines, and there are chemicals that would do that. I'm guessing you're looking for a chemical answer, so I would look for something that's going to control woody plants. I like Virginia creeper.
Yeah.
Oh, I do. That she didn't sound very happy about that, did she?
Well, it just sort of creeps up all the other plants and pokes them out.
Yeah.
I've
had luck sometimes because I have wild grape that I don't like. So I've also, if it's small enough patches, I've tried to hand pull some of it out and keep it back that way. A lot of the woody plants, if you're trying to kill them, the best time to treat is in the fall. And you might even try cutting those off close to the ground line, especially and find some bigger stems, and then actually paint that cut area with a brush killer herbicide. You may have better kill, but don't treat them now.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Roxanne in Trade Lake. Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Larry. I have a comment for the woman who called in about the black walnut that she wants to get in.
Yep.
If she wants to get rid of it, she should contact someone who does woodworking because black walnut is a pricey lumber.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's very beautiful lumber.
Mm-hmm.
If she really is serious about it. And mine is on the reverse of the black walnut. I grew up with what I thought was a black walnut in my yard, and so I've been treating it as such. And the last couple of years, I've found out it's actually a butternut.
Butternut's the same thing.
And that was the question, because the genus still has the juglon.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So is it as deadly as the black?
You know, there are so few butternuts because there is a disease that's pretty well wiped out most of the butternuts. So first of all, you should just kind of do a tap dance that you have a butternut tree. So I really can't tell you whether or not it's as, quote, bad as black walnut. I really don't know, but it does produce the chemical, too.
Okay.
So, as far as I know, probably not as much, but you probably know better than I do.
I guess a lot of things just die in my yard of neglect more than anything. So I was just wondering how much I needed to remove because I do have young ones growing up in the yard, and like I said, a lot of times they just get mowed off because I thought they were black walnuts and just didn't want to deal with them.
Yeah, yeah. I think you basically have to continue like you have a black walnut. Only, as I said, enjoy because you do have a butternut, which are pretty rare.
So with this disease, like mine is very sparse branches, kind of lumpy leaf clusters growing on the branches, all the way up, and I mean, it looks like it's dying. Is that the disease taking its?
Could be, as I said, this is rare enough that I'd have to do a little research to know more about the disease itself. This is another one that if you really wanted to pursue it, you could send a sample to our plant diagnostic clinic and they could diagnose it for you, culture it out, and see if that's what's going on.
Like a leaf sample or
it would branch sample.
Branch sample. Want to get part of the branch that was healthy and part that was infected.
Right. And it the base charge is $20 for that.
Okay. Well, it'd be good to know.
Yeah, it would be.
Because I keep threatening to cut it every year. So.
Yeah. No, it'd be good to know.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for calling. Thank you very much for calling. Boy, we've covered a whole lot of things here today, Barb.
And a wide variety. It's been fun.
And I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. You know, that's always the way. I mean, every one of our lines is filled, and we've got lots of email questions. But you know what? It happens that way every week.
That's good.
Always a pleasure. You'll come back and be with us again.
Great. I'd love to.
Barb will do that. Barb Larson is the UW Extension Horticulture Educator for Kenosha County. She's been a guest lots of times here on the show, and we'll certainly have her back, and we'll do this again. And, of course, next week we'll have another guest on. We'll do another edition of Garden Talk, and By golly, I've forgotten who that guest is, but we'll have it posted, that's for sure. I do know that on Monday, we've got the author of the book, What's Eating Your Child?, about the connections between diet and a variety of childhood ailments. It's a great book. I'm reading it right now. Then at 11:45, our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin, join us. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.